Maybe something off the plate.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Soon-to-be President Obama may have one less thing to worry about. This morning, Chrysler shored up its chances of survival. The Detroit carmaker signed an agreement with the Italian car company Fiat. The deal gives Fiat a stake in Chrysler. Ashley Milne-Tite is covering the story.
Fiat is taking a 35% stake in Chrysler, but it's not injecting cash into the Detroit carmaker. A statement from Chrysler's owner, Cerberus Capital Management, says there are no plans for future funding either. Instead, Fiat will pay to revamp some Chrysler facilities so the companies can share platforms and technologies. Birmingham Business School professor David Bailey says even though Chrysler got a loan from the U.S. government, it needed some extra support to survive. He says the U.S. automaker has to downsize and make cars that are cheaper to run.
Now, Fiat may actually provide an opportunity to produce cars which will appeal to American customers in the sense that they are smaller and much more economical.
Fiat had been looking for an American partner for a few months. The Italian company is keen to bring brands like the Alfa Romeo back to the U.S. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
By the way, Daimler still has a 20% stake in Chrysler, and the German company says it would love to sell that stake. It's welcome to any offers. There's word of more job cuts at Bank of America. The Financial Times says B of A is looking to get rid of up to 4,000 positions in its capital markets unit. We knew this was coming as part of B of A's consolidation with Merrill Lynch. Wall Street just opened for the week lower. So far, the Dow is down 126 points to 8,154. It's about 1.5%. The NASDAQ is down 2%, 31 points. And the S&P 500 also down 2%, 18 points. In Asia, the markets closed lower by almost 3%. European shares are mixed so far. But everyone's attention is on Washington today, not Wall Street. The recession has certainly hit the nation's capital, but not nearly as hard as some other places. Ronnie Radbill explains.
During times of crisis, Washington tends to prosper. From the Civil War to today's recession, the region's economy typically gets a boost from increased government spending. Steve Fuller is director of George Mason University's Center for Regional Analysis.
Federal government isn't cyclical. It may not spend a lot of money when things are going well, but wars, recessions, crises of various nature, it spends money.
And much of that money falls to local contractors who carry out government work. D.C. is also a magnet for special interests who spend millions on lobbying firms to press their agendas. Pete Metzger helps staff those firms at D.C.-based recruiting agency CT Partners.
People who have government relations outposts here are trying to position themselves in front of the new Democratic leadership.
D.C.'s unemployment rate is 4.4%, one of the lowest in the country. But the region is not immune to hardship. Retailers are struggling, businesses have closed, and homes are in foreclosure. Still, as long as the federal government's in town, the local economy appears to be insulated from the worst of the country's troubles. In Washington, I'm Ronnie Radbill for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, January 20th on Marketplace.org. The dispute between Russia and Ukraine over natural gas appears to finally be over. Russian supplies are now flowing across Ukraine toward Europe. Our European correspondent Stephen Beard has the latest.
Russia began pumping again after finally striking a deal with Ukraine. The two sides have signed a 10-year contract. Ukraine will pay double the price it paid last year for natural gas, and Russia will pay the Ukrainians higher transit fees. Europeans will be relieved. Over the past 2 weeks, 20 countries have lost supplies. Millions have been without heat. Julian Lee is with the Center for Global Energy Studies. He says that after this dispute, there are no winners.
Both Ukraine and Russia have done very great damage to their reputations as reliable suppliers and transit countries of gas. I think it's been a very sad and sorry exercise for all concerned.
He says Europeans will now step up their efforts to reduce their reliance on Russian gas. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The totals are in for venture capital spending in the U.S. last year. The amount of money poured into startups was down by a fifth. I actually thought it'd be a bigger drop, but it could just be the start of a trend. From the entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Venture capital funds sat on the sidelines in the fourth quarter of 2008, raising just one-third as much money as a year earlier. Mark Heeson, president of the National Venture Capital Association, says the drought will continue in 2009.
We will see less investing going on, fewer new funds being formed, and unfortunately, you'll see fewer entrepreneurs getting early stage money.
Part of the problem is that venture capitalists still have a lot of money tied up, trapped, really, in startups they've already invested in.
Companies that we thought would have been acquired or have gone public by now, venture capitalists continue to have to work with those companies and to fund those companies, and that gives them less time and less money to go out and invest in new companies.
But Heeson says entrepreneurs with a proven track record and a market-ready product should still be able to find funding, even in the downturn. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Today's inauguration will be a big test for the mobile phone companies. Just think of all those people texting and calling and uploading photos. Here's Jeremy Hobson.
Cell providers boost capacity for events like the Super Bowl and NASCAR races, but Joe Farron of the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association says today's inauguration will likely dwarf those gatherings when it comes to network demand.
We're talking about millions and millions of additional people converging in what is a very small area.
Farron says cell users should text, not talk, to reduce network congestion. And mobile companies are sending in temporary cell towers on wheels and boosting capacity of existing towers. Sprint Nextel spokesman John Taylor says the company got a trial run at Sunday's inaugural concert at the Lincoln Memorial.
We had an additional 1 million calls during that event.
The price tag for all this increased capacity is a secret, but Verizon spokesman John Johnson says
Verizon Wireless has invested more than $1 billion in greater D.C. since 2000.
Perhaps out of fear that any carrier that can't handle today's call volume may not be re-elected by its customers. I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Most people who made it to Washington for the festivities won't be getting into an inaugural ball tonight. They just can't afford it. But there will be plenty of things to do for the everyman and woman. Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer.
So here you are in downtown Washington. You paid a lot for your plane ticket and hotel room. You don't have the cash or connections for inaugural tickets, so you push your way onto the National Mall near the Capitol. Luckily for you, Obama's inaugural committee paid for huge jumbotrons so you can watch the swearing-in. You can also text the committee for updates on inaugural activities. Stephen Hess is a presidential historian at the Brookings Institution. He says there's a reason Obama is organizing all this fanfare for the common man.
This was a campaign that reached out to everybody, that cut across class, cut across race, and the inauguration's got to reflect that.
It's got to pay for it, too. The inaugural committee gave $700,000 to the Smithsonian Institution so it could open some of its museums early today. The museums are bracing for hordes of visitors. Brent Glass runs the National Museum of American History. Standing protectively in front of a new Lincoln exhibit, Glass is reminded of another president who threw a party for average Joes, Andrew Jackson. He was the last president to throw a huge public party at the White House in 1829. Drunken crowds trashed the place. Glass expects better from the Obama crowd.
They're not going to be drinking as they were in Andrew Jackson's day, where public drunkenness was a problem.
Alcohol will be served at a number of free or low-priced balls sponsored by the inaugural committee. There'll be a neighborhood ball for Washington residents and a half-price youth ball. But inclusiveness is expensive. The inaugural committee's budget is $50 million. That's about $10 million more than the last Bush inauguration. Inaugural committee spokeswoman Linda Douglas says there'll be no cutting the rug at some balls.
We are not putting carpet in one of the balls at all. We are reusing old carpet. We are reusing staging material to put the stages up.
That material could include leftovers from previous inaugurations. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Music. have a pretty good idea what Barack Obama wants to do once he becomes President Obama. And he said he wants bipartisan support for his economic plans. So let's hear from a more conservative viewpoint on fixing the economy. We're joined by Kevin Hassett. He's director of economic policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Okay, Kevin, what do you think Obama's number one priority should be?
I think the top priority is to be much more clear about what economic policy is going to look like than President Bush has been. Treasury has been running this TARP program and been doing it kind of under a cloak of secrecy. I think that that uncertainty or the uncertainty created by that has discouraged market participants from jumping in and throwing their own capital in there. Mm-hmm. It would be crazy, for example, to invest in a bank right now because you don't know if the Treasury is going to get in front of you. List the things that you think are the core principles of your policy and then stick to them.
Well, what's at the top of your list?
I think that it's very important for Congress to keep money in reserve. And I think that it's very important that Congress or Treasury be careful not to fritter away the TARP funds. You know, the temptation will be to go out and put out a little fire every day, and then we'll wake up a couple months from now and we won't have any money left. I think it's important for the TARP monies to be a backstop so that if things start to go wrong again, then we're ready to move quickly.
And Kevin, as far as the stimulus package goes, what do you think about the way it's shaping up?
I think that stimulus is necessary right now, but it needs to be tied again with clarity about what the long-run strategy is going to be. If we go out and we build bridges and buy fighter planes and, you know, mail people checks and so on, and at the same time signal that we're serious about returning to normal when the economy does, then it's likely that the stimulus can be quite effective. Now, getting a check in the mail that's financed by money we borrowed from the Chinese is not really cause for optimism.
But Kevin, you're a conservative. I thought you liked tax cuts.
Oh, I do like tax cuts. And you'll notice the nuance of my language. I said there must be ways to get more revenue. I think that if we cut the corporate tax, it's likely you'd get more revenue. And we don't get a lot of revenue relative to GDP in the U.S. We have about the highest corporate tax. So it's not necessarily the tax rate that has to go up. But, you know, absolutely, you have to be willing to lift some rates and to change things around right now. Because, look, if you reverse the Bush tax cuts, you're probably going to reduce the long-run deficit by, about 10% or something right now, as big as the deficit is.
Kevin Hassett is Director of Economic Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks. It's been great to be here.
Share your opinions with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.